Hello and welcome to Chai Can't Even, a part of the Project Zion podcast series. This is the podcast where young adults get real about life, faith, doubts, and everything in between. I'm your host, Blake Smith, and today I'm here with a very special guest. We know, of course, that church attendance has been on the decline for decades, especially among younger generations. So we might ask, why are some of us still here? These are the unfiltered, honest conversations about why we choose to stick around in Community of Christ, what keeps us coming back, and where we find meaning in the middle of it all. Again, I'm here with a special guest, and his name is Eldred Spain. Now, Eldred is not exactly part of the younger generation. He's actually in his 90s, and he's been around the church for a while, and he has got some great stories to tell. So I hope you'll enjoy our time together. Welcome, Eldred.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Eldred, we like to start off our episodes by just giving our listeners a little bit of extra insider information. So can you share some things just about who you are and where you live, what you're doing now, before we get into the deeper stories?
I'll start with early years. I was born in the middle of the Depression. My mother, before I was born, became a single parent. So three siblings and I were raised during the pre-World War II days by a single parent who had to go through what all the other people did of the Depression. She found work and found ways to survive. And we didn't know how tough it was until reflections later. When I was 7 and a half, in the middle of the second grade, a Pearl Harbor interrupted our life, and suddenly the Depression was over and World War II started. So from the time I was 7 and a half until about the time I turned 11, we lived most of that time in San Francisco because my mother and eventually my sister worked in the shipyard. And they were about the business of building ships for the U.S. Navy. My mother was very interested in church. So when I was 4 weeks old, she took me to my first family camp, a reunion, and I spent a week there. I don't remember any of it. She took me again when I was a year old, and I don't remember any of that. But I do remember some things when I was two. And what really stood out to me was there were certain, happened to be all men, who kind of led all the activities. But the thing I noticed was when the activities were not going on in a formal way, they were all around among the people and helping the people in whatever way they could. And that's when I first got the feeling that I'm going to be one of them.
Oh, someday. Wow. And how old were you then?
I was two.
Wow.
Well, I remember every summer going to reunion from then on. And again, every summer, recommitting that I wanted to be one of them. Didn't know what it was going to cost, but I got that start. Now, in our home, we believed in going to church. One of the places we lived in those early years was a little town called Lockwood in southwest Missouri. We had no church there, but we had a couple of families of people who were connected with the church. So when we were living in Lockwood, the pastor from Carthage, 30 some miles away, would take care of the morning congregational activities in Carthage and then come to Lockwood in the afternoon, and we would have our little gathering of 15 or so people. So in the morning, we went to the Methodist church. And my mother says I sang my first solo in church when I was 4. So we were active in the Methodist church as well as our own. And at that time, radio broadcasts from Independence on the KMBC station were broadcast in our area. So every time there was a radio broadcast, I think Evan Fry was one of the people along the way that did the broadcasts. We would be gathered around a radio and we would listen to those broadcasts. So we were connected with something bigger than Carthage and Lockwood. So I guess from the earliest days, I decided I was going to be a minister, whether I was ordained or not, and I tried to be even when I was a kid. Okay, that's kind of a little bit of background.
All right. Well, I want to pick up on a couple of things. So you talked about San Francisco, and then you talked about Lockwood, Missouri. So yes. how did you get from one to the other?
Oh, that's a bit of a story. It was the fall, like about October or November of 1941. My mother, a single mother, had a boyfriend who had joined the military, and he was stationed in Fort Ord, California. So we piled in the car and we checked out of school and everything. And at that time, I was a second grader. And we headed to Fort Ord and found a place nearby in a little town called Salinas. And I enrolled in school there and was there for 3 school days, during which my mother found out that the habit of drinking, which had been the major difficulty between the two of them, the drinking had not ceased. And so that courtship was ended, and we went on to San Francisco looking for work because the Depression was still on. We were there 2 or 3, 4 weeks, I don't remember precisely, on our way to or from church one Sunday morning. The people on the corner selling newspapers said, hear ye, read all about it. Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor. So World War II started and had just been in San Francisco a short time, probably a little less than a month.
Okay.
And we immediately headed back to Missouri. So was there at the start of the war, went back to Missouri. During that second year of school, I ended up going to 4 different schools in the process.
Oh my goodness.
San Francisco, Salinas, Lockwood, and then down to Carthage, because we went to stay, all 4 of us kids went to stay with Grandma and Grandpa, and Mom went back to San Francisco to look for work, and even with the war going on.
And is that where she did the shipbuilding, is back in San Francisco?
Yes. And then after my sister graduated from high school, she went over and was a welder on the ships.
Wow. Wow.
Rosie the Riveter. We didn't have a riveter. We had a welder and a painter. So we lived with Grandma from the winter of 42 until March of 43, when she came to Missouri and was now married. So she and her husband, my stepfather, came to Missouri to pick us all up. And Grandma and Grandpa went with us, and we all moved to San Francisco.
Oh, my goodness. Back Back again.
Back to San Francisco in 43. That would have been in March. Yep. In the meantime, I turned 8, and Mother and I were really close. In spite of that, I couldn't wait to be married until we were together, to be baptized until we were together again. So as soon as I turned 8, I was baptized in Carthage.
Okay.
And confirmed in late June, and first Sunday of July, I had my first communion in 42.
Wow.
Okay, that kind of catches up a little bit.
Okay, the other question I had, you mentioned being participating in the Methodist Church and in our church. I'm assuming that was the RLDS Church, Reorganized
Yes,
Church.
correct.
Okay. How long had your mother always been a member of the church? Was it a generational thing?
She was a third generation member of then RLDS Church. Yes. Eventually, her preceding generation joined, but that great-great-grandma, or whatever it figures out, was in her 60s when she joined.
Wow. And where would that have been in the United States?
Southwest Missouri.
Southwest Missouri.
Yeah.
Okay.
Grandma Steele.
And that would have been pretty early on in the reorganization then.
Oh, yes. My mother was born in 1908. Her mother was born in 81. And so back into the 1800s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a long, deep history.
Yep.
Can you think of, you talked about being at the age of 2 and being at family camp and seeing those men. Are there particular people that you remember or names that you remember that were influential, and or was it just in general seeing these men in ministry that inspired you?
Well, there were different ones every summer because of the traveling that many of the full-time ministers did.
Okay.
So it was different people. I do remember some friends who were Native Americans, the Williston family. I remember them, and there was always something interesting going on at their tent.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I ended up, when I was in my 20s, being a counselor at a youth camp where those twins, the Williston twins, who were, golly, 8 years younger than me, were campers.
Wow.
So this was later on when we finally had youth camps. Yeah, I don't remember the names of too many of the people. I remember that Brother Okerlund is the one who came and baptized me and
Okay.
participated in my confirmation. And he was not a member of our congregation, but he was available. And so that name sticks with me.
Very good. So let's talk a little bit about growing up in the church. You're baptized at 8, and you had already now for 6 years known that one of these days you were going to be a minister. That was what you wanted to do. What was life like in the church growing up back then?
I was a student, more so about church things than some of the subjects at school.
Okay.
So that by the time I was 12, I had learned the story of the Book of Mormon as it was taught in those days. And I could have taught it by 12. I would teach it differently now from what I would do then. But yeah, I was really a student. If there was something to learn, I wanted to know it. I do remember after we moved back to San Francisco that we had a little congregation that met in a rented facility where we attended, and We had all the visiting ministers we could get, which included a number of military people. I remember one particular member of the Navy who came in uniform multiple times over from the other side of San Francisco Bay to speak on Sunday mornings. He was a priest in the church. His name was Russell Ralston, and he and I became friends when I was, like I say, 10, 11, 12. In that period of time, I don't remember the names of all of them, but I do remember there were a lot of uniforms showing up on Sunday mornings. But we had a nice little congregation, and it was very active, very enlightening, good worship services. After World War II, we moved back to Missouri and got back into the congregation at Carthage that I had known before, and stayed in that for the rest of junior high and high school, and was very active in the youth group there. We called ourselves Zion's League, and I ended up, by the time I was 16, I was president of the group, so I got to help plan some worship services and invite ministers from neighboring congregations. It was a good experience. Got to be involved.
Did you find that during that time in the places that you were, that it was very common to have the young folks participating in worship planning or invitation like you're talking about there? Or was that, do you feel like that might have been special to your congregation?
It was special to the function of the service.
Okay.
Like if I invited people, it was because the youth were in charge of a Sunday evening service. Sunday morning, no, the youth did not participate except in the choirs.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I was always involved in the music, whatever it was.
So are you a singer?
I could carry a tune in those days.
Okay.
I ended up marrying a singer.
Okay.
I was training for opera and concert and classical music. She taught me about vocal music skills along the years. But no, I was just somebody who could read music, and so therefore I could make the sounds kind of on the right notes. I could also read music and read parts. So in our family, we had quartet time to sing, and whichever part was not covered is the one I would sing. Now, I couldn't sing bass very well, but I could go an octave higher and sing it, or sing tenor, or sing alto.
That's pretty gifted, I would say.
Well, music came easily enough that I got involved in instrumental music, played baritone horn in band and viola in orchestra through college years. But I love the music. Church music has always been important to me.
Very good. Well, I want to step back to the Zion's League, and some of our younger listeners may or may not have heard of Zion's League. I know that when I was growing up, we had Zion's League, and that was really our high school group.
Uh-huh.
And we had Zioneers for junior high.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
is that the same way it was divided?
Yes.
In your day? Okay.
Zioneers for junior high and Zion's League for senior high. But our group was small enough that we would take the 7th graders in with the 12th graders and just call them all Zion's League.
All Zion's League.
Yeah.
Well, we probably would have that happening in some congregations these days.
Oh, yeah.
As there are smaller families and fewer children.
Yep.
So How about as you, so what did, let me ask you first, what was your education?
Well, I went to a lot of schools.
Right.
And then when I was ready for college, it was a totally new thing in our family to go to college. And we still had issues with money. So it was necessary to borrow money so I could go to Graceland. But my mother had no questions in her mind that this kid was going to end up at Graceland. I never had a problem with school. In fact, when I was 4 and 5, my sister, 3 years older than me, would take me by the hand and we would go to the local country school with 8 grades in one room. And I would sit beside her and I would do what she was doing. Even when I was 4 and she was in second grade, I would copy what she was doing and listen to all the others in the room. So by the time I was 6, I was ready for the third grade because I'd been through this stuff already. Could
That's
read and write, could count to 100 by ones and twos and fives and tens, and knew the alphabet and knew the do re mi fa sol la ti do stuff. And yeah,
you.
she, my sister Carolyn, 3 years older, made sure that I learned everything that she knew.
That's great. That's great.
So I was kind of always ahead of the class a little bit.
Well, it sounds like your mother was just an extraordinary woman, sacrificing to go across country with you and the children being with your grandmother and grandfather, and her going and working, and then seeing that you could go to Graceland in spite of the financial struggle.
She was very strong on education, even though she hadn't finished the eighth grade herself. She did not want to rely on welfare type stuff, even during the Depression. But when a course was offered under what we would later call vocational rehabilitation, when the course was offered, she became a licensed practical nurse. At the end of my sophomore year, after during the first 2 years of high school, we had accepted some welfare to help me because by then we were a family of two, and she wanted to stay home as much as possible and take care of me. Lived on a little farm. She decided we would move to town and she would get in the nursing home business. And by the time she was fully active in the nursing home business, she had multiple nursing homes and was very successful in that, extremely successful. She wanted to make sure that I knew everything I could, so made sure I got to Graceland. It was a 2-year school, and after that went to University of Central Missouri in Warrensburg, Missouri. And 3 more years. After 5 years, I had a bachelor's degree, and after 3 more summers and a couple of night school courses, I had a master's in educational counseling, and I was teaching school. Yeah, she was pushing education for me, and a whole lot of it she taught me. She had strange little quirky sayings, like she wanted to make sure that I could do critical analysis. But her way of teaching that was to say, don't believe everything you read. Remember, a piece of paper will just lie still while you write anything on it. And so early on, she wanted me to think clearly.
That's great.
She also religiously said that she didn't want me to do my behavior on the basis of what I thought she might want me to do, or for me to base it on what the church wanted me to do. or base it on what I felt God wanted me to do. She wanted me to always make the decision on what is the right thing to do.
Interesting.
And that was a broader concept than some of the people taught at church, actually.
That's something we could all hold on to, I think.
I still do, even though I'm 91. I still hang on to that. It has to be interpreted into the electronic media today. Same principle.
So you got your bachelor's degree and then your master's degree in education.
All in education.
Okay. And then what happened?
Taught school in Missouri for 6 years. Was married at the end of my fifth year of college. Graduated in May, got married in July, and finally got a paycheck the end of September.
Oh my goodness.
Teaching school. Paycheck was a pittance compared to what I could get later, but had a job at least, and taught in Adrian, Missouri for 6 years. By then we had girls. At the end of those 6 years, we had girls, three and one, in our family. And we decided it was time to move to Phoenix. So we moved to Arizona in 1963. And I came without a job, but I got an ideal job teaching government, the 12th grade level. I taught there 13 years and had a great experience and well respected in that particular high school. Did a lot of things above and beyond just teaching in the class. Now, in terms of church ordination, at the beginning of my fifth year of college, I was called to the office of teacher. So I was ordained in Warrensburg by a state president named Harry Simons. And that was in 1956. We moved to Phoenix in 63, and in 66, I was ordained an elder and became pastor in January of 67.
Wow.
Pastor at Phoenix Central. I was an elder for 3 years and then ordained a high priest and served as a high priest for close to 30 years. Started appointment in 1976 and was under appointment till I retired in 97.
So let me stop you there for a second, because
sure.
Probably there would be listeners that we have that don't know what appointment is.
Thank you. That's a strange term that isn't always used today.
Right.
But in the 70s, it still meant somebody who is hired by the church and appointed to wherever he was needed. And at that time, it was all males. And so I was appointed the first year in 76, 77 to go to California and work in two of the stakes, which are larger jurisdictions with a number of congregations in each one. And those stakes were in the L.A. area. L.A., California had a number of congregations divided into two stakes. And I attended school at the Southern California School of Theology at Claremont. And that's where the church sent me the first year. And Carolyn, fortunately, my wife, was able to audit every course that I took. So in effect, we did that doctoral level work together.
Together.
Yeah.
Did you end with a degree from that, or was...
No, I was 1 year short of a Doctor of Ministry degree, but I would have had to go out into the field and do kind of supervised ministry in the field, wherever, and then come back for another year at Claremont, and that would have given me a doctorate.
But probably you have the equivalent of that in your years of ministry.
It doesn't stop.
I know you to be a lifelong learner, so I can imagine that you have far surpassed that education requirement.
That's an interesting thing you just said, because a good friend of mine, the first year that I was working with a church full time, happened to be in Missouri riding around with her to some of the meetings that we were going to. And on the way, she asked if I missed teaching. And I said, oh, yes. In my heart, I will always be a teacher, no matter. And she says, but the bigger question is, will you always be a student? And I looked at her and said, yes.
That is an amazing trait that more of us could use.
Oh, yeah. I still want to learn. Yeah.
Well, let me take us off subject here for a minute and say, what's the best thing you've read recently or learned?
Well, I was just reading the Herald, and the lead article starts on page 5 and then concludes on page 4. You got to be able to read the little fine print to know that.
It goes backwards. I haven't read the Herald yet, so.
It just came today.
Okay.
And I haven't missed too many world conferences since I was a senior in high school, but missed this one because I didn't have any traveling partner to go with. And I can't handle heavy luggage by myself, so I didn't pop on the plane and go. I could drive the rental car once I got there, but the luggage was an issue, so I didn't go. So I'm reading her article that she has about the hope and the fanning the flames of the activities that come out of who we are as a people confronting a productive period of time in front of us. It's a neat article. That's the most recent.
Okay. And it was a very exciting conference. Of course, it was an historical conference for us with the ordination of Stacey Graham as our president and prophet, and a very diverse first presidency with our first non-white member of the presidency, with Bunda Chibwe stepping into that role, and of course, Jhené Grover joining him. And it was also a conference that I felt, at least, was the least contentious we've had in a while. There was just a really good spirit there. But it marks a lot of change that has happened in the church. And speaking of change, I would imagine that a young man who felt that calling even at the age of 2 and has been in it since the Depression, you've witnessed a lot of change in the church.
Yes, an immediate change. The pastor's wife in Carthage got me aside and told me that that Zion would not be built with women who wore pants.
Really?
And I smiled. And I didn't even believe her when I was in high school.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I knew some people who had worked in the shipyard who had to wear pants on jobs. And they didn't change who they were, just changed what they looked like. And so even then, that was the first change, really. Second change was, I tried to learn that huge scroll that was put up on the wall, and it would show what life was like after death.
The old preaching charts.
I could not learn it. I tried to memorize it even, because I wanted to be able to do it when I was an adult. But by the time I was an adult, I had discarded that particular approach for me. By then, the approach was to move among the people and minister rather than to give some type of story about something you don't know anything about. Not a single person using those scrolls had died and come back to tell us. Not one. Now, later on, my wife, Carolyn, read a number of books on life after life of people who had had near-death experiences and had experienced something beyond the normal and come back, and there was consistency and coherency there. That begins to tell us a story that doesn't tie with all the things that were guessed over the years. So anyway, that's one change, is the change in the way women dress. Second one is the way we teach. And the third one that I could conjure up right away is the way we worship. As I reflect back to the preaching of the early years for me, 30s and early 40s, it was often talking at people. And the sermons that have evolved that attract the most response now are the sermons that include personal experience, but not to lift the person up, but to lift God up and Christ's way. And when those experiences tell that in a way that is real life, they're responded to. And so that's a change that I've experienced over the years. Of course, another thing that's changed is the whole use of young people and then women also after youth. The change was occurring long before 1984, when we were instructed to not react inappropriately when people who were women were being ordained. And I had had an experience as early as 1973, which had already changed it for me. In 73, there were a number of women's and administrators' institutes that were held around North America, five, as I recall, the number may have slipped me, but I think there was one in Canada and the other four in the United States. Anyway, whatever it was, we attended 16 women and two men from Arizona attended the one held at Chapman College in Orange, California. And during that time there, we saw the women and the kind of leadership they were giving in the institutes. That was one thing. But then I'd already witnessed that in Phoenix to see what was going on here when women had a chance. But then my wife and I overheard a conversation by some people seated behind us, said kind of a loud aside, and one said, One of these days, they're going to be ordaining women, and the first one's ordained going to be in Arizona. Well, I took that seriously because as pastor, I was pastor 67 to 70, and then again in 75, took the job again. And I always was praying on the issue of who do we need to have serving in ministerial roles different than what they're doing now. Even if they're not in one, should they be? And so I prayed. Now, when I talk with God, I kind of imagine answers that I get. They're not audible. I can't hear them. But they're as real as if they're audible. And so I prayed, are we ever going to have ordination of women? And the answer said, is that a concern to you? Oh, yes, was my response back. I've always prayed about who should be ordained, and I've never, ever gotten a woman's name. And the answer came back, well, do you always make a list? And there's never been a woman on the list. Oh, in my conversation, okay, God, here's a blank sheet of paper. Help me construct the list. And so I constructed a list, and it had several women's names on it. And four, I got assurance that they should be serving as elders. After section 156, and ordination of women was provided for, all four were ordained elders. But intermediate to that, in 1974, my mother in Missouri had a period of time which for several weeks, she essentially lost her vision. She could still see light, but she couldn't read. She couldn't do things. Vision was pretty well gone. So we packed up our girls and headed back in the summer. And Barb brought a friend along. Five of us went back to Carthage to see what was to be done. And my mother said, well, I'm fine. Here's some money. Go down to the reunion. And this will help your expenses down there. There's a reunion going on right now. So I went down there, and during the reunion, Carolyn and I sat with Morris Draper, member of the presidency, and told about what I had experienced about, without naming names, because my wife didn't see the list.
Oh, okay.
She didn't know what was on the list other than the fact that I had some experiences and another experience separate from that as well. And so we said, if I were to submit names, what's the possibility that something could happen? This is 1974.
Wow.
1984. And Morris got Terry and said, well, we have names on our desk right now, but we have nothing we can do about them. So if you submit them, even if they end up on our desk, we can't do anything about it. We don't have any way to do it. It's not possible. So I also told him another thing, if I can take a little aside here.
Sure.
I'd had an experience. I don't know if it was a vision or a dream or what, but I woke up and was aware that I was processing a scene at what was then the old Phoenix Central Church, where a group of men were gathered I presumed it was a group of ordained ministers. And we had a woman teaching a class, and the class was on spirituality. And what she was saying was making a lot of sense to me. I could understand what it was. And some of the people started, and eventually they were concerned that they shouldn't have this woman teaching about spirituality. It should be a man. And so eventually she just handed me the book. She sat down, and there was a little infant on that front pew. And she picked that infant up and rocked it back and forth and cried. And so I took the book. It was a gorgeous book, fantastic looking thing. And I started teaching from the book, and the people almost cheered because of the insights that she was trying to teach. But now I'm trying to teach what she was trying to teach. So I told that to Morris, and he looked at us and said, "And that was whom?" And I told him again, and he got teary-eyed again, and he said, "Probably she is the wisest one in the church now on the issue of spirituality, and nobody knows it."
Wow.
So I had this experience to share with him also, that what she was doing when she picked up that baby, she was crying about the future of the church that's lost if we can't have the ministry of women. And that was in 1974, I'm sharing this with member of the presidency. So yeah, along the way, some interesting things have happened.
Absolutely. It was a long road. Another decade after that. We're having such a good conversation here at Chai Can't Even that we're going to take a break. We invite you to join us here next time for a continuation of this conversation with Eldred Spain. Thanks for being here with us today. We always appreciate when you take time out of your day to spend time with us. Thank you, and have a blessed rest of your day.